Cape Talk, Pippa's Planet.
Anybody who commutes from the South Peninsula knows that traffic congestion can be an absolute nightmare. There are extensive roadworks already underway to try and alleviate this, and more still on the cards. And it's one of those still planned projects which has some members of the community really concerned about potential environmental impact. And I'm delighted to have with us in studio two of those community members. Andrea Maree-Porchita is a PhD candidate in eco-psychology, which is a field that studies the relationship between humans and the natural world and the striving for harmony between the two, if I can put it that way. And then the second voice you'll hear should be familiar to you, because Alison Faraday has spoken to us several times before in her capacity as, I think we can call her, an environmental champion with the Toad Nuts. She is devoted to protecting this area's endangered wildlife. Andrea and Alison, welcome to the studio. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pippa.
And then listening in on the line is the city's MACO member for Transport and Urban Development, Councillor Brett Herron, whose department is also integrally involved in this story. Brett, thank you for making time for us this afternoon and welcome to the show.
Hi, Pippa. Thank you.
I'm going to start with Andrea and Alison to give us an overview of what development we're talking about and what their concerns are, and then we're going to hear from Brett his response to those concerns. Andrea, there are lots of different projects going on in this valley, so I think it is very important that we first sketch for the listeners particularly which road development you are concerned about.
Yes, so the specific road development we're very concerned about is the Homewood Road extension, and it will extend from the current Homewood Road, and Homewood means keep courageous,
courage,
or
yeah.
Stay courageous. And it will go through two ponds or close to two very pristine ponds right through to Lakavata Road, and then also behind Masipumulele, linking up to Fish Eagle Park. So that's really the road that we're very concerned about.
Okay, so the first phase is from the Noordhoek Main Road linking up to the bottom of Lakavata, and then the second phase I know goes all along the back of Masipumulele to Fish Eagle Park. And it's particularly that first phase that you most concerned about, is that correct?
Absolutely, Papa. We're very concerned. That's really the womb of biodiversity for our wetland. There's been otters at these wetlands. The toads breed there. There's an abundant amount of bird life that stay in those ponds and around those ponds in the reed beds. And if those ponds get more polluted or polluted, you know, we really put at risk not just the wetlands and not just the home of these animals, but also the life and well-being of all the communities around these wetlands.
When you speak of fears of pollution, are you worried about pollution as a side effect of the development of the road itself, or ongoing pollution perhaps in the form of noise or encroachment into those wetlands?
All of the above.
Okay.
They all really impact the wetlands and the ponds. So it will be human pollution. When people walk, sometimes they drop a packet of chips and it blows into the wetlands, the runoff from the road, the toxins that come from that. And then, of course, these wetlands actually capture a lot of the water coming from all the developments around the wetland. So there's a bunch of factors that impact pollution when we talk about it. And then, of course, noise pollution, light pollution, all of that will impact the wetland, and not just in the space where the road will be, but the noise carries over the wetland and animals start breeding and avoiding for noise and light. And that has a big impact on the genetic variability of animals in the wetland.
Okay. We have to look at the other side of this conversation. There is a potential positive impact here for human occupants of the valley, particularly for residents of Masipumulele, because this effectively would allow them to walk one side of a triangle rather than the two very much longer sides they currently have to walk to access the main shopping and transport hubs. You obviously see it, though, in your field of eco-psychology as needing to balance the needs of the two. It's always a tricky business, isn't it?
It's absolutely tricky, Pippa, but I don't see it like that. I don't see it as benefiting the people that live in Masipumulele. I think it's going to put them at risk, and I'll tell you why. If the wetlands collapses, which will be, it's a high likelihood that it would, maybe not now, maybe not in 5 years, maybe not in 10 years, but when the wetlands loses its capacity to actually drain water, the communities around the wetlands are at risk for flooding, and people in Masipumulele will be at most risk when that actually happens, because they are in the 5 meter flood line of the wetland. The second thing is that there was a report from the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. And in this report, they specifically said high employment and other benefits of land restoration actually outweighs and far exceeds the costs involved in building building and degrading land. And for Africa, the cost of inaction in the face of land degradation is at least 3 times higher than the cost of action. And what that really means is that if we fix the wetland, the parts where it's looking a little bit unhealthy, it will actually benefit the communities, especially Masipumelele, in terms of job creation. And the other thing is that I don't know if you know the school called Work for Love, but it's on the southern edge of the wetland, and I volunteered there last year. And one of my biggest concern is that this road will steal the stories from the kids in Masipumelele, because they tell stories of animals that wander into the school grounds. They talk about listening to the plants growing and the wetland noises, and it creates a whole living connectedness for them with nature. And that road will impact the animals, which will impact the wetland, which will impact the stories that the next generation will be able to tell about nature.
Okay. Thank you for that that summary, Andrea. Alison, we often speak to you about the toads, and I know they are one of the crucial species you're most concerned about. Andrea's already alluded to the fact, though, it's more than just the toads, isn't it?
It's much more than the toads. But the toads in themselves, they have the same status as the rhino in terms of conservation. And the faunal report that has just been released has big holes in it. One of the things they say is it doesn't really matter if these populations of toads become extinct, because there's other populations of toads that could replace them in some way. And it's kind of like saying, well, if we lose all the rhinos it's in KwaZulu-Natal, we'll have some more in the Kruger Park to fall back on. So it is about the toads, but it's about the connectedness of the food chain and the web of life in that particular area. But I think what is really missing is our understanding of the value of wetlands. People don't really get what wetlands do, because they're kind of part of the planet where we don't really go to. Humans don't really like wetlands. They're boggy, they're marshy, and often they're smelly. But wetlands, in fact, are the interface between the land and the ocean. They catch the runoff are from our gardens, from the mountains, when the rains come, and they will come. And they slow that water down. And one of the most crucial things that wetlands do is they act as a filter. So before that water starts flooding and spreading out to the ocean, it stops the nutrients and the other materials going into the ocean, which will have an impact on our fish stock. But also they replenish our groundwater supplies. And surely that's a hot topic in Cape Town today.
Absolutely. I'd like to bring in here a caller we have on the line, and just a reminder that you can call in on 021-446-0567. I am going to give Councillor Brett Herron a chance to respond in just a moment. But just to add to this conversation, I have James on the line, who is, I think, a property owner along Lekavata Road, which is part of this picture. James, good afternoon.
Yes, hi, Pippa, and thanks to Andrew and Alison and the listeners.
What would you like to say? James, are you in support of this project or against it?
Well, completely against it. I've been here since 1979, which is 39 years now. So I know how much the wetlands are in support, especially of the toads and the animals. I know how at one stage there were hundreds of leopard toads on my property. And now they're only just starting to come back, which is a fantastic sign. Another thing is that if you want to know exactly where I am, I'm right next to Work for Love. The school that
Alison
Andrea was talking about, yes. And they've been talking about expropriating for this road since 1993. So I've been putting up with this most of my adult life. And it's absolutely ridiculous. They still haven't offered me anything for the part they want to expropriate. They haven't given me any price, nothing. I don't know what's going on. And I've got 5 houses here.
James, do you feel, it sounds like that you feel there's been a lack of communication with the affected community?
There is a total lack of communication. You know, we've got Chan coming in and we have meetings with them, but they can't give answers.
Okay, James, you can stay on the line if you'd like to listen in. I want to give Councillor Brett Herron a chance to respond here. He's the MACO member for Transport and Urban Development and has been listening to all of the conversations that have led up to this. Brett, I know an environmental impact assessment has been done for this project and it is now, I think, into a fairly advanced phase. The concerns that Andrea and Alison have raised are worrying, to say the least. Have they been tackled by that environmental assessment process?
So, Pippa, first of all, obviously I'm at a bit of a disadvantage in this conversation because I'm not a wetland expert. But the concerns that they're raising are concerns that obviously we grapple with in deciding to roll out this project. And we, as a city that is has a wetland that is has Ramsar status. As I think we're the first city in the world to apply for citywide Ramsar status, I think we've demonstrated and we continue to demonstrate our concern for wetlands and for our role as a custodian of the rehabilitation of wetlands and the protection of wetlands. So we don't make decisions lightly. My understanding of the road and the maps that I've seen is that the proposed road would be an edge along the edge of the wetland. And there are advantages of us creating that road besides the traffic advantages. I mean, there's obviously the intrusion into the wetland by informal structures and the construction of a road along the edge of the wetland will provide a hard edge beyond which no further intrusion could take place. We would be able to control the pollution of the water through the management of the sewer system, where the polluted water would divert into the sewer system rather into the wetland. And so we think there are some positive ecological outcomes of this proposed project.
You see positive impact as a potential. What did that environmental assessment say, though, about the impact on animal life in particular? I'm looking at a table here that maps out concerns around freshwater impact, botanical impact, impact on flora and fauna as well. Can you sketch for us, Brett, what that EIA said about those?
I actually can't, Pippa. I haven't read the full environmental impact. In preparation for talking to you, I was briefed by the engineers on the project. I've known about the project for a very long time, but what the environmental impact assessment says and how we need to mitigate for those impacts is obviously something that the decision maker will have to take into account when they make that decision. But what I understand is that the impact of the road is very small in terms of the impact on the wetlands, and the proposals in terms of mitigation is that other wetlands need to be, the offsets will be in other areas where we will do substantially more wetland rehabilitation.
Brett, can you just give us a sense of where this project is at in terms of processes and at what point it goes ahead? Are you at a point, you said, where a decision still has to be made? Is it not a given that this road will be built?
I think we're waiting for the outcome of the environmental impact assessment. We've been grappling with this road for a very long time, and as James says, it's been a road reserved for road construction for a very long time. So about three years ago, we identified traffic congestion hotspots. The far south, the Cormickey, was one of those that was identified, and part of the solution beyond the public transport and the non-motorized transport solutions was to identify those road links that were planned originally that were never constructed. And the Homewood Road extension is one of those roads that was planned, and it is part of our road network that has been constructed because of lack of funding. But given the traffic pressures, given the pressures that we're in or under in terms of Masikumelele, the expansion of Masikumelele, and the overcrowding of Masikumelele, the road is a critical in relieving a lot of those pressures.
We're losing the line there slightly, so I'm going to ask my producer to see if we can get Brett on a slightly clearer line. In the meantime, Alison, you have seen that environmental impact report. What is it? What does it sketch?
Dying to jump in there, Pippa. First of all, one of the things that Councillor Heron says is that when they put the road in, then they'll be able to fix up the wetland. What he hasn't mentioned, in fact, that the city about 18 months ago illegally dug open sewage canals directly into the wetland from Massey, which are open, can be seen on Google Earth quite clearly. So the wetland has been compromised by the city. So to say we are now going to build a road and that will allow us to fix up the wetland is circular logic, and that's just not right. But also to say that the road will alleviate traffic, that is highly disputable because the traffic is really bad in the south. Nobody can argue that. But in fact, what international studies show is that when traffic gets to a really bad place, people start making other arrangements. They start lift clubbing, they start pooling, and in fact, we need public transport. But that's another discussion. So by opening up a road here, all it will really do is create another place for cars to queue, because ultimately people are all trying to get onto Okapsevach.
They're all going to feed into the same end point.
Exactly. Yeah. So you'll just be waiting in a different place. So it'll feel psychologically like you're making progress, but are you really? And at what cost? That road is going to, although people say it's on the edge of the wetland, why is the edge of the wetland less important than the middle of the wetland? These are two pristine ponds. They are the last fragments of wetland that the wildlife and the human population in that area rely on. And to put a road through those ponds, how can that possibly make sense?
I want to hear from Stephen, who's given us a call from Noatak, and listen to a voice note before we go back to Alison and Andrea for a little bit more on that before we move on. Let's hear that voice note.
Hi, Pippa. I'm preempting your South Peninsula discussion because I'm sitting at the traffic lights at the mall at the base of Okopseweg at 10 past 2 on a Friday afternoon, and the traffic is already backed up heading back towards Okopseweg going south. And yeah, of course there are going to be environmental issues with putting a road essentially right on the edge or partly through the wetland. But the reality is that the traffic pressure on this peninsula is just massive, and it's going to get even bigger as the new developments come online. And then all of us need to realize that responsibility for the environment starts with how many children we have, where we choose to live. But so simply by choosing to live on this peninsula, we're already impacting. But then to say that a road can't happen, this road has to happen. The traffic pressure is just untenable, and we're going to have to mitigate against the environmental consequences as long as we can, or as much as we can.
All right. Thank you for that voice note. There is another comment on the WhatsApp line from someone who is in favor of the project, saying, as a resident of the South Peninsula, I believe Brett Herron is making sense. The wetland is currently unprotected from various human influences. An SMS asking, would this extension not possibly create a better boundary between the ponds and the ever increasing size of Masipumelele? The pollution flowing into those ponds already must surely affect the entire area. Stephen on the line is a resident of Noatak. Stephen, how do you feel about this proposed development? Good afternoon.
Hi, Pippa. Thank you. I'm very much against it. I do agree that something has to be done. I'm a resident in the area and the traffic is horrific. There are so many different levels of information that have gone back and forth with this road. And I just want to make four quick points. The most important being, Mr. Herron, you say that you are informed that the impact is minimal. You are grossly misinformed, sir. Anybody who goes to have a look at the site, the structure, the proposed routing, and the area that it travels through will see a different story. Chand, who is responsible to provide the unbiased and independent environmental impact assessments, I'm astounded at how biased they actually are. And the way that they've gone about trying to advertise the lack of impact is devious, in my opinion. The process, this road was supposed to be in production already. The original process of the whole impact environmental assessment was supposed to be finished last year. And Chan made such a hash of that initial report, they needed to submit another draft one. And we're still busy a year and a half later with that. So we could go into depth in terms of the impact and all of that. I've made the points about Chan, the bias, and how uninformed the city is. I challenge anybody to go and have a look and see at what actually is wanting to be done with the ponds, with the wetlands, with phase one, with phase two, with Masi that has been horrifically handled in the past by the city. And the last thing I want to say is that they're just widening a bottleneck. The traffic is untenable because Patricia de Lille allowed development after development after development to go through. There are communities in that valley that are still fighting developments that have been approved, all for the coffers of the city. But you still have a dual-lane road on the one side, being Komiki Road, and a dual-lane road on the other side, being Okopseweg. All they're doing is widening the bottleneck.
Stephen and Noatak making some very relevant points there. Thanks for your call. Alison, I think there are two terms we need to clarify for listeners. He mentions Chand. I think many people are probably going, who's Chand? What's that? Won't you just explain for us, please?
Yeah, Chand is the organization that's been employed by the city of Cape Town to handle this whole process. So they are the people who have employed the environmental impact assessors, the water specialists, the traffic specialists, and they facilitated the process. I completely agree with the caller saying that they are biased. That's absolutely clear in everything that you see. But we are encouraging listeners to please register as an interested and affected party. It's a very simple thing to do. It's an email. So if they could email support@chand.co.za, Chand is C-H-A-N-D, all they have to say is they would like to be an interested and affected party. The comment date for this stage of the process is the 4th of June. Thereafter, no public comment will be entertained. So it's absolutely vital that the numbers come through, that people say what they need to say about the road and the potential impact on the wetland. And the final thing I want to say, the caller who phoned in to say she's sitting in traffic, I totally get that. I sit in traffic all the time myself. But the assumption then is that a 1,200 meter stretch of road is going to solve all of those problems. It's not. How can 1 kilometer of road fix the problems that are exacerbated by the ongoing development in the south? And the final thing, Pip, I just want to say is, what does a collapsed wetland do? What does it look like? Because that is what could happen. The wetland in 1998 was surveyed by Davis Gartner, who said then, in 1998, that the wetlands are at a tipping point and that something should be done. 20 years later, the only thing that actually has been done is further erosion of the basis of this wetland. When a wetland collapses, what will then happen is we'll have a boggy, stinking mess that will affect everybody in the valley. And bear in mind, this little stretch of wetland actually services all the way from Fishhook right through to Komiki. We will all be affected very, very badly. So having a road will not make life better if you won't want to live in the valley after all.
Yeah. Just in closing, Andrea, the word Ramsar was used much earlier on, and I think many listeners won't know what that is, but it speaks to the issue of protection of wetlands on a bigger scale. Won't you just explain what Ramsar means and whether it applies to this particular wetland?
Sure. So Ramsar is an international criteria, and unfortunately the Noordic Wetlands isn't a Ramsar site. But it should be. It matches about 7 out of the 9 criteria of being a Ramsar site. But what our wetland is protected by is the Environmental Conservation Act. And that was the act that was used in 2003 when the appeal was upheld, the last time the city tried to build this road. And that act actually protected our Noordhoek wetland. But there are also other acts that protect the wetland, and those are the Biodiversity Act, the National Water Act, and the National Environmental Management Act. So our wetland does have a lot of environmental protection legally. Mm-hmm. It might not be a direct wetland act, but it does so indirectly. And I also just want to say to the caller that was sitting in traffic, we all sit in traffic, and we're certainly not opposed to a road, but we're opposed to a road that will destroy the wetlands. And that's really what we're against. And Chand and the city hasn't looked at alternative ways in which they can build extra roads.
That was going to be my final question. Mm-hmm. It's clear that something is needed. And yes, Alison, we can have an hour-long conversation about the public transport system and not even scratch the surface. But if it is to be a road, is there somewhere else that a road could go that wouldn't impact on the wetlands?
Well, yes, we think there is. We've spoken to a lot of residents. We're part of a coalition of civic bodies. There's quite a few organizations that are participating along the whole stretch of this road to oppose it. And in speaking to the people who live in the areas, they say, but all you need to do is open this and open that, and this is the shortcut. And in fact, many of those roads have been closed off illegally by residents. So that is something the city needs to look at. There's plenty of roads. Maybe they don't connect up in the way that they should to allow free flow, but the roads are there. So we're not opposed to a road. We're opposed to destruction of a wetland.
I want to thank you both for joining us today, Andrea Murray-Portgieter and Alison Faraday. And please keep us updated. 4th of June is the deadline for you to register as an interested party. So let me just close by repeating that email address. It is support@chand.co.za. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Pippa.